Hello, and welcome to the third episode of All I Do Is Fail, the podcast in which we like to look at life's failures and celebrate them. I'm your host, Tom Elwes, joined today by my co-host, the very talented comedian, Mr. Ali Woods.
Hello, I'm very talented, Tom Elwes.
Thank you very much, Ali. And we're joined today by our guest, the very talented comedian, Joseph Parsons.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello. I like, very talented is a stretch, but thank you.
We're a very talented table.
Yeah, we only have talented people on.
Only have.
You know.
I feel honoured.
Tom, for our big listeners, for our big families. Yeah.
Later we will be joined by a dragon, Bashy, and DJ Khaled. They were the people we promised you.
Oh, and the comedian who believes there's no history.
Yeah, Joseph, is this you? Is this what you're about to say? Yeah.
I don't believe in history.
Yeah.
There is someone I met recently who doesn't believe in history.
A comedian.
Doesn't believe in the concept of history or the constructs of history or does he just live in the present?
Basically, yeah, as in thinks the present, the now time has been like that forever.
Does he believe in the future?
I don't know. We're going to get him on.
So we promised...
He sounds... A laugh. Yeah. I'm gonna say it.
Or simple. Either way. Yeah. You know.
And he is very, very talented as well. But in any case, yeah, I mean, it's a shame not to get Bashy on. We need to slag him off more. That could be a weekly feature.
How to slag off Bashy. Maybe we should have a whole segment on like Bashy-related facts. Also, our campaign for dildo strings, that's been...
Yes.
Oh, well, that's something that needs to be explored quickly.
Yeah, we were starting a small campaign. We had Matthew Hutchinson on last week, who's a doctor. And he was telling us that the big issue with sex toys is that they don't have strings and they're getting stuck up people. So we started a campaign, charity campaign here at All I Do Is Fail to get more strings on dildos. So.
Yeah. I've, do you know what that is? Dragon's Den that.
Yeah.
Dragon's Den that because I would buy it.
Yeah.
So guys, still check out dildostrings.org.
Dot orgasm.
Yeah.
There he is.
See how it goes.
Yeah. Okay. So, as ever, on All I Do Is Fail, we're going to start with our failed news segment. This week we have some Halloween-related failures in the news. We'll start
it's
with...
It's a shame when this goes out in December
24th. Yeah. We're nicely dating this. This is good. Yeah. But we've got a few Halloween-related fails, just because...
You know. Yeah, that's a good idea. Sorry, I didn't mean to say it wasn't
no.
a great idea. I know this is gonna...
Just slay the researcher, it's fine.
You like Bonfire in February.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. When this goes out on Valentine's Day, people...
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Okay, so the first failure of the week is the biscuit Halloween fail. And this is a man called Adrian, who took to Twitter... to announce that his two daughters, Poppy, aged 7, and Edie, aged 5, were given some McVitie's chocolate digestives while they're doing the rounds trick-or-treating of their local neighbourhood. After the children went to bed, Adrian decided to open the packet of digestive and sneakily try a biscuit, not realising they had a best-before date of May 15, 1999.
Ooh. Wow, that's good.
1999. That is... Now, there's many levels to this, and I'm just thinking, is this just an evil person, or just a very, you know, just... Who has products in their cupboards from 1999? This is...
I'm not sure if that's an advert for McVitie's, or not really, that they can last that long and not discolour.
I'll stop you, because he bit into the biscuits and realised that they tasted just awful, he said, and the colouring on them, they had gone very white, as opposed to the normal brown colour.
Oh, but, is that like a chocolate level on top? Does he go into that detail?
I think the chocolate was fine, it was just the underside of the biscuit was completely white.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's rancid, isn't it?
What I don't get about it is... Surely the packaging of a McVitie's biscuit pack has changed in 18 years. Did you not look at the pack and think, well, why is David Beckham with his ponytail on the side of these McVitie's digestives?
We remember those times.
Exactly.
I think there's two possible theories here. One, it's just someone who in a panic has gone, oh, shit, it's Halloween, I've got to give these kids something. Back of the cupboard, boom, biscuits, kids like biscuits, thrown it in.
Yeah.
Two... they're evil. They're just evil, yeah, an evil person, and just thought, right, I'm going to poison some children. And this has got a whole sadistic thing. And, you know, God knows what else he's given out on Halloween.
Haribo from 1984. Yeah.
Some pesto from, the 70s. It's,
How on earth? Okay, has anyone got anything in their house that has survived for 18 years? How has this person managed to hold on to a pack of biscuits for 18 years? If it was a child, it would be sending his biscuits to university or something at this point.
By the way, does he have children?
Yeah, true.
Have they survived? Have we got any info on these?
It doesn't say anything about the person who gave the biscuits out, which is a bit annoying, because I would have actually liked to know. But I'm going to go with old person panic, as opposed to sadistic, evil motherfucker poisoning children. You know, he gets a kick out of it. Just,
Maybe that person's really upset. Maybe they gave him the wrong McVitie's packet. I mean, surely, having spent 18 years with a packet of McVitie's biscuits, you'd have grown attached to that packet. You wouldn't be giving them out willy-nilly. I think they might have reached for the wrong packet.
I feel like that's kind of a stretch, what to say, that they were holding on to these McVitie's out of, like...
A collector's item. Oh, you know those big McVitie collectors that exist in this world now? Yeah. along with the people who collect coins.
Maybe this person thought... In 1999, they were like, right, Y2K, it's going to happen, this is the last year of my life.
Oh, they're survivalists. They've been in a basement for the last, 18
That's
years.
That's what I'm thinking,
17 years, 18 years, they've been in a basement, they've emerged, it's Halloween, they've panicked and gone, you know what's still good? Yeah. That's a theory.
Yeah. I mean,
it is a theory.
Yeah.
I don't understand how anyone can keep any food for 18 years. I buy a pack of McVitie's biscuits, it sometimes doesn't last till the afternoon. That's not fair on the biscuits. They need to be eaten. Oh, well. Well, that is disgusting. And I'm sorry. I'm glad that... Also, Dad, why is he eating his children's candy?
Sneaking in. When I'm a dad, I can't... I'll be chowing down.
Some blame needs to be apportioned there as well.
He took the hit on that one.
Yeah, but I think, well done. Otherwise, his children may be in hospital or worse. Biscuit poisoning.
Lucky. Should have let them make their own decision.
Took the hit.
The kids probably would have picked up and gone, Dad, this is a bit weird, but he's so lazy and bored of his own life, he just went, give me biscuits. And Amy's wife, okay, anyway, enough of that.
Yeah. So that was a very strange...
Gave up with that quite quickly, though.
Oh, mate, I don't understand. I agree with you, Tom. I'm getting more and more angry at this story as it comes out. Has this happened? 18 years.
No, I'm with you. 18 years.
18 years.
It's a ridiculously long time to have anything in your cupboard.
18 years is from when it expired. I don't know how biscuits last, but probably months, a year maybe.
I worry by how intense you've got over this.
I'm a man who just thinks food is there to be eaten.
And 18 years, I mean, you think how long that's. I mean, that's not just a ridiculously long time. That's just like eight. That's an entire person's like lifetime.
That's their adolescence and childhood, and growing up and losing their virginity, learning to drive.
Yeah.
Sat there, not be eaten.
You had an ambitious adolescence. You got a lot done there. I got much more than that.
Not my adolescence.
Not
speaking from my relatable.
Mainly playing pogs in the dark.
Oh, bloody hell. Well done for averting the kid's death.
So, actually, maybe the moral of this story is the dad took the hit.
Always test your poisonous products.
Okay, so we got another...
Did it say where that was, by the way?
It was in North Yorkshire.
Okay.
Yeah.
No prejudice here. We all silently agreed with that. That's fine.
That is a place.
That's a place.
A lot of McVitie's chat. If you're listening, McVitie's, come on the show.
We'd like to have one of you on.
Some biscuits. Give us some biscuits. We'll see how long it lasts.
We're starting another charity campaign? Is this the second? Yeah.
I will start any campaign that people are willing to sell me free stuff for. Let it be dildos.
Yes.
Or biscuits.
Out of date biscuits.
Send in your out of date biscuits. Yeah. This is where people email in and go, I've had this pack of biscuits in Midrar since 1949.
David, I've got some pesto from 1971. We'd like to see photos. If people want to message in to All I Do Is Fail, we'd like to see the sell by date of the oldest thing you have in your fridge or cupboard.
Yes.
Lovely. Lovely.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
But only after some people have done it.
Yeah. Just if you've got anything older, if you can beat 1999, then we're going to be impressed. There'll be a prize or something.
Joe, have you got anything disgusting in your kitchen?
No, because I don't have a lot in my fridge. Just sort of, I'm one of those people who doesn't go on a big food shop. I just buy what I need for that day. Hideous way of living.
Very, very modern. I remember, I think the worst things I've ever eaten, though, for a long period of time, I was just, when I was a student, I had no money. I was just eating porridge for dinner. But then I actually didn't have any milk, so I was just making porridge with water and salt. I was eating gruel. I ate gruel for a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not that Oliver Twist life.
That's hardcore Oliver Twist life.
Oliver Twist. Ah, you're on the Oliver Twist diet. Yeah. So good.
Suitable for this podcast. Yeah. Failure so strong that you're on grill.
Someone at uni I live with, so we're in the kitchen, and someone just says, there are a lot of flies in this kitchen. And we all look up, and it's summer, so we're kind of thinking, but there's loads of flies. I don't know what the hell is going on. We're looking around, looking into a cupboard. This dude had left onions so untouched for so long that maggots had grown, and there was a nest of maggots in our kitchen garden.
That's pretty nuts. Yeah.
He did not live with us the next year.
Well, it's like when
maggot
you,
boy.
Yeah. It's like when you go into your bread bin and you're like, there's bread so old and like mouldy that when you open it up, it's like steam arises from the bread. It's just like,
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Second fail. Again, sort of Halloween related. I don't really know if this is a fail or more just like we're aiding the Scottish police here, but this is the force was not strong with a Jedi who broke his ankle after an assault by a fellow Halloween partygoer dressed as Jesus.
Nice.
Police are appealing for witnesses to the incident, which happened at 3 a.m. on Wednesday following a party at Dundee University. A man dressed as Jesus is understood to have punched the Star Wars cosplayer in the face, causing him to fall to the ground and break his ankle. The victim was left needing treatment. That's about it, really. The man was described as being in his mid-20s, 5'10", medium build, with long brown hair and a beard. So
the Messiah has returned.
Yeah.
And he's pissed off.
Yeah, but fights can happen. I remember seeing a fight. I remember seeing one of the best things I've ever seen on Halloween was a guy walking down the street dressed as the Joker from Batman, and then Batman, another unrelated to this guy, on the other side of the street, they saw each other, and it was sort of like, you know, when cats see another cat, it was like, boom in each other's face, and then they just ran to each other and started wrestling in the middle of the street.
That's sick. That's amazing. I mean, that's a great story, to be fair, those two. Ironically, it was Jesus who used force.
That is a joke. Really is the argument of science versus religion, isn't it? Big old fight.
Did it say which Jedi he was?
It did not, actually.
I just realised I've gone with like Star Wars being scientifically completely correct. That's just something, a fact.
Yeah.
A fact from history, which apparently doesn't
exist. In my head, I immediately thought, oh yeah, Jedi is the religion, And I thought, so Jesus was science.
I think we can clarify neither are science.
Was it one of those where it was like, who wore it best in the robes? And they were just like, you can't have two of us wearing the same
robes. I feel like Jesus and Jedis could be easily confused. I feel like, you know, that's quite a similar... vibe outfit going on there.
Yeah, true, man. I mean, if Jesus had a lightsaber, he would have just got off that cross easily. I assume that was the only reason he didn't get off, was because he didn't have a glowing torch.
Yeah, that would have been why.
But like, so like Jesus can, I know there's obviously lots of biblical stuff, but like Jesus can, you know, perform miracles. Mm. Why not, you know, miracle himself off the cross? That's...
I don't know, you're supposed to die
for... Die for his causes, I know, and all the sins and everything, but, you know... If I was Jesus...
I bet you say you are.
If I was Jesus, I'd be, you know, miracling myself right off that cross and, to Hawaii or something.
I don't feel qualified to talk about this because I've never read the Bible and I've never seen Star Wars.
Seen Star Wars?
I love how that's what we're angry about. Like, not Star Wars? What the hell's wrong with you, you freak? Like, oh my God.
I have a very short attention span, so I don't really watch many films because I can't last past an hour. But the big problem is I'm not a big sci-fi fan, so I've never just been interested enough to watch
it's
it.
It's more than sci-fi, mate.
It's a brilliant... Apparently, it's a religion
Space opera. It's a space opera, and it's, you know...
How can you say no
themes of love and failure, and, you know, maybe we'll just do a whole episode on Star Wars.
And I'm sure it's lovely.
Yeah.
But no, I've just never watched it, so...
So do you not watch films, then?
I don't...
What was the last film you watched?
The last film you watched?
Just trying to remember that. Actually, I watched Black Sheep, which is technically a comedy. And I wasn't sure if it was a comedy or just a really bad film. It was like one of those Room moments. Have you seen The Room? With
yes, yeah.
That, actually, that's the last thing I saw in the cinema. They do like a thing in the, what's it called? The Prince of Wales.
So funny.
And they just throw spoons. And yeah. It's the best to do that. But yeah, I think that was probably the last film I probably... But even then, I only watched like half an hour of Black Sheep.
That Room, you know, that could be, that's a failure and a win all in itself. Just that scene with when he's in the shop, he's like, "Hi, doggy," and then just like, it makes zero sense. It's just like, and I know the Disaster Artist, that apparently James Franco's film is going to be up for Oscars and stuff because apparently it's amazing. But
is it?
Yeah. Apparently it's an incredible film. Really? But yeah, the actual Room of the film is just like the insanity of a man who, and apparently he like fired his whole production team halfway through because they were all just like, "This is completely insane. This is the worst script of all time, and this makes no sense." It's just completely. It's the story of just a crazy man who just thought, who was constantly rejected as an actor, and just thought, "Right, I've been rejected. I'm just going to go alone and do it myself. And if I'm paying for it, everyone has to do what I say."
Yeah, he filmed it on like two cameras of just slightly different angles.
Like all
round for every camera angle. Had like two different cameras just to get the right shot because it needed to be perfect.
Wasn't there a sex scene that they just played twice or something? Like
yes,
that?
This is the opening bit, and it's harrowing.
There's that creepy little boy like runs upstairs as well. They're all just like, "What are you doing?" And he's just like, "I just want to watch you." And he's just like, "What? You weird little freak, get out of here!"
It's every year, Prince of Wales. I'm going to try and go this year. So I think it's in February time.
Okay.
So do you only watch bad films?
No, I tend, if I go home, I watch like either a very short bit of comedy, a bit of sport, and actually my calm down thing after gigs is I watch EastEnders, and it's fine.
I've genuinely got sort of a failure about EastEnders, and this isn't even a joke. This is actually 100% truth. Okay, like
you killed
kids.
Off.
Yeah, no, kids. Kids today, right, they complain about, like, my mom's godson, like, always complaining about, like, he's just like, oh, he's like 14, he's like, oh, there's nothing to watch on Netflix. Like, shut up, you've got the whole internet of, like, material to watch. You know what we had to watch every single day? EastEnders on channels 1 to 5, that was it.
And that stuff's like crack. Yeah. Like, I now am addicted to EastEnders. I don't like it, I don't enjoy it, the acting is terrible, but I will still watch it because I need to know what's going
but
on.
But as a child, there was no other choice but EastEnders. That was just on every single day, and you'd have to watch. As a 12-year-old, I cared way too much about 70-year-olds with hoop earrings. Just like, my knowledge of Pat Butcher was off the chain, to a point where I genuinely asked my mum as a child if I could go as some characters from EastEnders for Halloween. Not even
amazing.
A joke.
Amazing. Wow.
I can tell you what, not much has changed apart from the actors.
It's
and
Pat Butcher's...
often they're the same, like, it's the best thing. Peter Beale has had like 5 different people playing him, but he's still Peter Beale.
What, so they keep the character?
They keep the character, but change the actor.
No.
They've changed Ben like 6 times. Ben, Phil Mitchell's, it's amazing. It's like Doctor Who.
EastEnders Doctor Who.
EastEnders do it without the reincarnation.
I like it to be like gender fluid EastEnders now, because you know they're talking about getting a female. Just be like Pat Butcher played by a bloke. We're gonna get a Chinese guy to play Pat Butcher. That's where we're going.
You're gonna be very sad. She's not there anymore. Oh. She's actually no longer with us.
Didn't she come back as a ghost in an episode? I feel like
she did.
What?
She did. But it was like
CGI.
It was her and Peggy Mitchell chatting and just going, "Oh God, it's terrible." It was really bad, humdrum sort of acting. But yes, no, she's no longer this.
It's a bit like in Star Wars when they CGI'd in.
I was like, it's the guy, the mean emperor guy.
I'm going to say it was haunting.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
How bizarre.
It wasn't beautiful.
I was a Coronation Street household.
I still watch that too. I watched that this morning before I came to this.
What an advert for Joe Parsons, everyone.
It just relaxes me. I don't have to think.
But the other weird thing that you do as a kid as well when watching soaps as a 12-year-old is you'd watch them every single day, and then on Sunday you just re-watch them all in the omnibus. Literally, you just watch like, you know, 4 hours on the bounce.
What are the rules as a 27-year-old watching them on a Saturday morning with a coffee?
I never did that with EastEnders, but with Come Dine With Me, yes I did.
Rewatch.
Come Dine With Me for Channel 4. I always had an essay due in for the Monday, because that was the kind of school I went to. And then on the Sunday afternoon, I just watched all the 5 episodes of Come Dine With Me instead of doing the essay. Because it was so good. Come Down With Me. Have you guys not watched it?
No, no,
I used to love it when I was in, like, it would be a thing I'd watch when I get home from school.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, Come Down With Me.
Bash Come Down With Me, Hollyoaks, Simpsons. Great
cover. Mate, I saw an episode when I was, shout out to Angel, this is where we all help out. But I was helping on the door there. And you know, at the Camden Head pub, at this pub, listeners, there's TVs that they put on silent with subtitles, even though, and they just put on random channels. Yeah. Like, I swear, I've been there once where they were doing the, what's it, that Naked channel? What is it, Naked Dating or something like that?
Oh, that's
they had that on the
Naked
screen.
Naked Attraction.
Naked Attraction. Oh, they had that on the screen in the pub. So there was just like five cocks just there at like 10:45 at this pub. Anyway.
Honestly, who's going on that show? That's right. Yeah. Who's signing up for that?
There's a comedian who went on there.
Really?
Yeah. I'll tell you about it.
Okay. But that's a show that I'm not in agreement with. Naked Attraction. That's just, how are you going to date someone because of their penis? That's what you're going on. It's, or vagina. Just, yeah, you know.
It's what we all want to do, though, isn't it? No, it isn't. That's a lie.
You have to do it yourself, don't you, at the end? Because that's what I learned, because it was on the thing. Because I'd never watched it before, but...
Yeah.
Alien concept to me that you would ever do that on TV. We're all comedians. We all have... confidence issues. You'd have to have like balls of steel, quite literally, to be on that show.
Well, like, the really interesting one is just like when like there are obviously a load of dudes who go on there who have like giant elephant trunks, right? And they're on there because they're proud of what they got going on. And then sometimes you just get rogue dudes, just like tiny little thing, just like just deal with it.
I'm
not ashamed. Like, you've made it weird. It's a social construct. I'm fine.
Wow. Well, what were we talking about?
I'm sorry, we went off this.
To Hollyoaks. Anyway, sorry, so there was a line that came up on the subtitles, which just made me think, who the hell is writing this? Where it said, killed my nephew, this time we're through.
Yeah. This time.
What do they do the first time?
Exactly, I don't know. And also the idea that, but maybe not. Like, isn't it you can't just go around killing my nephew and expect us still to be going out.
Yeah.
I love soap.
That sounds like a Jeremy Kyle like slogan. Yeah, it's just like, you killed my dog and I accidentally slept with my brother. Now we're over. Like, just, you know.
Now who's the mum?
I love soap storylines. There's one in EastEnders at the moment where the two sisters, Abby and Lauren, right? Classic EastEnders characters. One was engaged to a guy who was pretending to have a brain tumour, which was then being helped by Lauren's sister, Abby, to make it more convincing by feeding him animal drugs. And then Abby and...
She was feeding him animal drugs to make his brain tumour convincing to others?
To make him look more ill and make him
what?
More...
What animal drugs was it?
I don't know. They were very vague with the details. They can be vague.
Just like dog worming pills.
just giving them drugs. And then so they were then starting to have an affair behind this girl's back.
Right.
He then died and she has got his baby, the sister. And now the sister told Lauren, going, oh, by the way, I slept with your fiance. I have a baby, and I was helping him fake brain tumours.
Well, he was faking the brain tumours.
Yeah, he was faking.
And then he died. Because of the animal drugs.
Yeah. He didn't die because of the animal drugs. There was a separate. It's EastEnders, so a big explosion, fire, and all that sort of stuff. I watched it this morning. The resolution of that is that they've told each other and they went, oh well, we're still sisters. What? Yeah. Why? No, hate each other forever.
What? You know, I'd love to write a soap. That'd be good. That'd be a fun. You know, she gets more comics to write soap. Yeah. You know, things.
I think they do in Coronation Street. To be fair, it's quite funny.
Mate, Corey is funny.
It's funny.
Funny stuff, man. I mean, but that's what we were saying. Going back to the disaster artists in the room. Like, the only reason soaps a lot of the time are funny is because they are so sincere. Like, the people are really going for it. Like. Loads of people try and write parody soaps, but never quite as good because you're in on the joke here.
Yeah. You're invested in the character. Yeah. But I would like to think, like, do soap stars sometimes read their scripts, you know, for future on? They're just like, oh, what? Fake brain tumour with dog worming pills. Like, come on, like, where are we going with this? Like,
I like that we're in a room of soap sympathisers. Like, we're like, no, we can get it. I like it's very relaxing to watch other people's fake trauma. There you go. That's a resolution of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jesus fighting sci-fi.
I mean, that's just a classic sort of Halloween brawl, I guess. I guess it's only really funny because they were both dressed up. Otherwise, it would just be two blokes had a fight. But yeah. So we'll move on to the third and final failed news story, which is thieves in Hawaii are stealing cans of Spam and selling them on the streets for quick cash to buy drugs, according to authorities. So this is a story about how thieves have been stealing Spam in Hawaii, because apparently it's very, very popular. Hawaiians eat millions of cans of Spam a year, the nation's highest per capita consumption of processed meat. The meat, which is a mixture of pork shoulder, ham, sugar and salt. So apparently Spam is very popular in Hawaii, and they've been thieves have been stealing it and then quickly selling it on the street for drugs. So who would have thought, you know?
I love that Spam is now what is
a commodity to be sold. Yeah,
yeah, it was so big in like the wartime.
Well, I think Spam is in England thought was the worst food. You know, it's like you know, everyone, the running joke, like, no, I'd rather eat Spam. It's no one wants to eat Spam.
It's up there with gruel, isn't it?
Yeah, gruel and Spam, yeah.
Was that what you were living off?
Yeah, pretty.
Tom's diet is right.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom's got the rationing cookbook.
I wonder why he chose this story.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying that in Shoreditch, there is a restaurant that does like 1940s cuisine, and like Spam is on the menu.
Amazing that that's in Shoreditch, isn't it?
Blows your mind.
Definitely going to be 18 quid.
Yeah, yeah. Like £18 for artisan Spam.
Yeah.
Bet it's all deconstructed.
Oh my God. The tropical paradise Hawaii.
Yeah. They're chowing down Spam.
They love Spam.
They love it.
So, sorry.
Millions of cans.
Let me get this right. So, people are stealing Spam from the supermarket to sell it on streets.
How expensive for drugs. Is it there? So like caviar?
Well, I think this is just very desperate, and apparently it's just a commodity that you can quickly sell because everyone wants Spam.
I'm getting Hawaii wrong. Who's taking drugs in Hawaii? Isn't it just a brilliant place to live?
Big meth problem. Big meth problem.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like it's like a lot of places, like, you know, on the picturesque postcard side of it, beautiful, but then also there's a sort of murky underworld of Hawaii. Yeah.
Oh, I know it well as a guy from Western Supermare, which is a paradise, I think we can all agree.
That's always the toss-up when people go their honeymoons. It's like, where should we go? Hawaii or
Western Supermare? Exactly. And, I mean, there is a dark side, guys. Yeah. It's not all great.
You go under that pier and it's... Yeah. Yeah.
And so many drugs.
Yeah, I always thought with seaside towns, is that what's... In the summer, I imagine quite fantastic and very nice for those few days of sunshine. But in winter, I imagine seaside towns being not fun.
Hey, there is so little to do in the winter. But we are near Bristol, which is great. It's the hub of brilliance.
So if you want to go out, it's like Bristol, like your Vegas.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, it's not like my Vegas. Yeah. It's everyone's Vegas. Bristol, everyone's Vegas. Mm. I do drive in, that's the sign.
Bristol's quite good, to be fair.
Oh, it's
like it.
Glorious. It's one of my favourite
Their
places.
Their bus stops are a bit racist.
What? Explain.
Explain that.
When I was on a bus in Bristol, and the bus stop was literally called like Black Boy Hill.
Okay. Very big history in slavery.
Massive
Bristol.
History in slavery.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay. This is real.
Yeah, genuinely, they've not changged the names of some of the places.
Wow, this is. I mean, if this was America, we'd be tearing down the bus stop. You know, we'd be ripping that down and burning it.
And it's a heavily liberal place. Yeah, it's really. Bristol. You go in there, and it's lovely and liberal, and they are starting to sort of there's a few things that they're trying to change. Colston Hall, for instance. Colston, I think, was named after something. There was something to do with the slave trade.
So I have a point. So talking about ripping down statues of culturally inappropriate historical figures, I think I do see the argument, but then I do also think, how far back are we going? And if we're going to do it in England, like, are we getting rid of all the Henry VIII statues? He killed his wife. You know, that's the worst one, a murderer.
That's
so, like, how far do we go with this? It's, you know.
I was thinking this as well.
Is there a time point where we go, from here backwards is okay, but here forwards is not?
Well, history doesn't exist, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's true. That's
glad we had the history. Yeah, the guy doesn't believe in history.
I was thinking this as well, actually, the other day. I was just like, we say war is bad, but literally all the statues in the UK are of, like, soldiers or generals or stuff like that.
Yeah.
I know they're fighting for a cause, but...
Well, like, war you can see, you kind of celebrate, but it's more just, like, historical figures who obviously... Like, if you go back in time, like, every historical, like, king or... Like, probably did something pretty horrific at some point.
I mean, we need to go back a few years in the film industry. I mean...
Exactly. Yeah.
Monarchs and royalty in the last 1,000 years.
I mean, it's horrible, isn't it? Because every... like, country's history is built up of something horrible happening.
Yeah.
There's such a pivotal part of a country's development that you can't help but look at it in either... And we, as humans, we always look at things in a relatively positive sheen. Like, World War II, awful. but there's a victory there.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we won. Yeah. So it's all fine. And actually, the if you scratch being
Germans, awful. Probably a bit different view on it. Yeah,
exactly. And but then there's a thing in German. I talked to a German person the other day, often known as a German. The person very much not needed in that.
Someone but, from Deutschland.
I was talking to them, and they genuinely think there's a huge guilt just laid on Germans, just inbred to their culture now. After everything that's happened in the last 100 years or so,
and
that's how they felt.
Yeah,
but
I can see it. You know, I can see it. I won't lie, Germans. I can see it.
But if you think about it, that happened. There's very few people who were involved with that alive now, and that guilt will still continue. And I think it's actually helped improve their liberal sort of agenda. They're very liberal Germany now.
Okay, right. So I'll mark that as the end of the news. Welcome back to All I Do Is Fail. We're going to move on to our main segment with Joseph Parsons. This is your own homebrewed fail of your life.
So, I mean, there are so many to choose from, but I'm going to go with one that happened last year, because I'm like, last year was a great year for me. It wasn't, but I decided that the best thing to do would go to Glastonbury Festival. We've been to Glastonbury.
Absolutely. I went when I was 11.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's pretty rock and roll.
That is very rock and roll. Did your parents take you?
Cool. Yeah.
Your parents are legends.
If I went on my own, that would
could have gone with an uncle.
Look.
Oh, God, yeah.
Ali went and sold Noss aged 11.
I loved Glastonbury. It was amazing. It was one of those moments where I got to see loads of brilliant bands. Right, great time. I was having a bit of a shit year. I was like, this is going to be the turning point of my year, and I discovered drugs that year, like in a good in a big
that's
way.
Quite yeah. Because I went to my Glastonbury experience. Normally consists of 3 days of just drinking booze and only eating the stamps the acid came on. So it's
It was. I'm gonna say it. Like I did drugs a few weekends, like in a month, which is 3 of the 4 weekends in a month. Right? I'd take MDMA or ecstasy at that time because I was sort of in between Western and London, and it was just a way of saving money on booze. And I just really enjoyed it. As soon as you first discover MDMA, you're like, this is it. I can't believe I haven't done this before. And
again, if any MDMA producers out there want to send us some free samples.
Yeah, some free MDMA. We're also...
genuinely just like pure joy. So I got a load of MDMA pills, and you have to smuggle it into... Because you can get them on the dark web. A friend of mine got them from the dark web, these little teddy bear MDMA pills, and they are... powerful.
Wow.
I didn't know they were powerful.
Well, they look like teddy bears?
They're little teddy bears.
It's interesting that you would... That's not what I want my MDMA... You know, like, I want something a bit more scary, you know? Just something like, there's a fire, or like, you know, like a dragon. No, we are the dragon, you know? Or something like evil, like, these ones are mental, they're fucking dragon on them, not like the teddy bears. Like,
I want a hug from a teddy bear. Yeah, I don't want a dragon in anywhere near me in drug form. But I was really nervous about smuggling it in, so I didn't want anything too big or sort of powdery or anything like that, or crystally. So I got this and wrapped it in a load of masking tape, put it in the bottom of a shampoo and poo bottle, and put all the shampoo over the top.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's
classic.
No way that they were going to find it. It's in a very scented area, so there was scent dogs, blah, blah, blah. Reality just wandered through. I could have had literally a drug full of, like a bag full of drugs, but it was fine. So we got there, and I started from about Thursday afternoon right through to Sunday.
Right.
I'm just taking MDMA, cocaine, all that sort of stuff.
Presumably not eating or drinking very little.
No,
water.
Oh God, no. It was just an absolute mess. I lost so much weight because it was really muddy that year, and you walk miles at Glastonbury, and you're just fine to do so. And I was so buzzed off my...
What we're trying to pitch here is if you want to lose weight, just 4 days of drugs and walking around a field, and you'll be sweet enough.
No questions, mate. Just enjoy.
We're going to start a camp for people. Like, you know, there's people going away to like dietitianry camps or whatever. We'll start our own one. We'll lob you some MD. And we'll get you walking around a pole in a field, hours on end. playing heavy trance music. It's, yeah, you know.
We've got two diets currently on this program. Yeah. We've got the Tom Elwes Oliver Twist gruel diet, and then you've got the Joseph Parsons
drug cocktail diet. Yeah.
So week one is gruel for a week, nothing else, and gruel and some spam if you're lucky.
Yeah, and then
week two is we make you run around a field playing heavy trance music. Well, absolutely off your nut on drugs. And
that's what's going on in Hawaii, then. The spam and the drugs, it's all coming together.
It's a Western Supermare cocktail, I understand. Yeah. There's not much to do there, so you end up eventually going to drugs. And also, all the drug rehabilitations in the world are in Western. It's
really?
Like one of the biggest drug rehabilitation areas in the world. So there's lots of drugs there, because where drug rehabs are, drugs are. It's sort of how it works. But that's, I should say, at this point, I'm not doing drugs. I wasn't doing drugs because I thought it was rock and roll and cool. There was definitely a void that wanted to be filled. But I was there and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. So I just took drugs, had a great time. My brother was there. We all had an amazing time, right? But then I sort of realised about Saturday, I was getting really tired. I was running out of like happiness because it just drains your serotonin. Mm. So I was like eating pineapple because apparently pineapple is really good for replenishing serotonin.
That's something else. The false facts about drugs, like if you're freaking out or whatever, it's as a kid, like as a teenager, unbelievable the stuff that people would come out with. It's just like, dude, I'm, you know, if you have a big one, you're just like, someone's going to freak out. It's like, dude, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die. Like there's a 70% chance right now that I will just die. And then someone's like, all right, man, all you got to do is just neck a pint of orange juice, then dunk your head in cold water, like up and down, you'll be fine, don't worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And like this, so I spent the full day on Saturday just drinking, it actually might have been Friday, doesn't matter about the time, that doesn't matter, but I was just drinking pineapple juice, having pineapples, like this is going to make me happy again. And then
where
I started.
Where did you get all these pineapples from?
It was Glastonbury, mate. Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah. Everyone everywhere. Heard the rumour, they're just
everywhere, that and falafel. All you need. It was amazing. And then I went to what it was Sigur Rós were playing out. It's one of my favourite bands of all time. And I took some MDMA to start with. Like I had some powder, I found that somewhere, just like you do. And I took that, and I watched it, and it was the best. And I came up so buzzed, but I could feel myself coming down. Now, my tactic throughout the whole Glastonbury experience was to take cocaine when you're feeling down, to restart MDMA, so you don't always have to take MDMA.
Bloody hell!
Yeah, so okay. You end up. So I did a bit of coke earlier that time, and my friend was like, "Oh, I've got some coke here," and I took it. And here's where, and then I went quite weird, and I realised that wasn't coke; it was ketamine.
The old
switcheroo. That's ketamine. Yeah. You know, we've all
been
there.
It wasn't harmless cocaine.
Yeah, the old there's botulinum of that, and like, let's go, boys. No, that's not. That's just not.
It's not coke. It's ketamine. No, lovely, friendly ketamine.
Oh dear.
So I wandered off to Arcadia. Now Arcadia is a big spider that has like drum and bass music and is just flaming. And I got there, at this point, quite zombified.
Yeah.
And I was just there, looking at the spider. My mates were there, going, oh, mates, I'm having a great time. They're all, like, on MDMA. I'm on horrible ketamine, and I don't like this.
So, forgive me. Okay, I'm very unaware of drugs, right? So I've only ever taken MDMA once and a little bit, and that's pretty much it. I've never even smoked weed. Never seen.
So let's just say cocaine is up and ketamine is down.
So what does ketamine do?
It's very tranquil. Well, for me, it's different for different people because I know a few people who actually really enjoy it. I don't understand how. But it makes you just feel, it made me feel very slow and I couldn't actually talk properly.
Wow.
I was just zombified, just staring into space. And I was just staring at this spider and I remember just going, the only words I'll say is that, I don't like it. I don't like it.
There's something with drugs that they don't tell you at school. They should. These are real life lessons that they don't tell you about going to work in a job in London. 70% of your office at some point will take shitloads of cocaine. And if you don't take cocaine, like myself, you're going to have to be around these people. And it's going to be really annoying. And they're going to tell you a million times that the conversation's going to go like this. You're really great. You're really great. You're really great. I'm really great, I'm really great, I'm really great. And that's all that's going to happen. And they're going to repeat the same story like a million times, shouting it very loudly.
I literally had this experience last night with, I was around my mate's house for the first time, he's just moved. And it was like a group of like 8 or 9 of us and 3 guys took coke and the rest of us were drinking. And it was just like these 3 just going around doing exactly that. And you're just sitting there going, what do you want from me? Like, do I need to be here for this?
Do
I just replace myself with a cardboard cutter? And you'd be like, mate, I love you. Like, I literally love you. Like, holding this cardboard cutter. Like, I literally think, like, we're the best ever friends. Yeah. It's like, what?
Yeah. I feel that it should be said that people on drugs are the worst people. And I was definitely not right that night. And my friends were literally trying to move me and couldn't even manoeuvre me. I was just in a horrible state. I'd made a grave error by being very complacent with drugs. And for the previous 24 to 25 years before that, I was very anti-drugs. And then for some reason, I was like, fuck it, I'm 26, I can do this. And
floodgates opened.
Yeah, and then floodgates opens. And I was just in this horrible state. And I was like, right, what I need now is some MDMA. Of course, it's what you think. It's a normal thing to think.
Yeah. And it's doing the old what gets out red wine, bit of white wine.
Yeah, exactly. It really was. And I was like, right, this is top on top, layering my drugs now because I'm a connoisseur. And I took it, no effect. But the only effect was I completely blacked out at that point. I don't know what happened. Apart from, and I got back to the tent, my home tent, which was like horrible by that point. And I wandered there. The only fact that I know about that night is that was not the only tent I went in.
So I have a very similar, squatting at festivals, okay, is a big deal. And ironically, the people who normally squat at festivals are normally people who are squatting on the street as well, or, you know, in places. But, you know, I went back to my tent once. It wasn't Glastonbury, it was a different festival. But, like, went back to my tent, 3 o'clock in the morning, get in there. There's one of these white men with dreadlocks, you know, the yogurt weavers. Yeah, right. Get in there. There's just a man in my tent. I said, get out of my tent. Yeah, get out of here, man. He honestly rolls over, right? Looks at me.
Sleeping?
Yeah, he's sleeping. He's asleep in my tent, right? He honestly rolls over, looks at me, and he goes, oh, yeah, it's... it's not my tent, is it? And I was like, no, it's not. Get out. And he was just like, oh, I'm really sorry. I'll leave in the morning. I was like, no, get the fuck are you joking? And then he honestly said, like, so I started to get very irate and was just like, seriously, dude, like, what the hell? He was just like, oh, let's all just chill out. Like, why don't we just have a massage or something? I was like, what?
What a negotiator.
Yeah, imagine if someone broke into your house and went, oh, sorry, mate, but massage?
Yeah. I think it was actually, let's have a group massage. And I said, there's only two of us in here. What do you want? Where's this going, mate?
I mean, I do offer that regularly to groups of men. but yes, I know I went into a minimum of three tents.
I'm sure.
And I'm going to say the response was hostile.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't like, oh, don't worry, mate. Which I needed that because I was in a horrible place. I'm like, don't worry, mate. You're in the wrong tent. Just keep walking and never see us again. They're like, oh, fuck off. And that made me even more like jittery. And I was like, I don't like this anymore. And I got back to my tent and I woke up the next morning. I was like, start again. And it was the worst experience of my life. And I would say it's one of the biggest fails of my life.
Just a 4 day binge at Glastonbury.
A 4 day binge at Glastonbury. And then ending in the worst drug ever, having broken into 3 to 4 different tents on the way back home.
Yeah.
And then waking up and thinking, I might see these people the next day. And thought, what am I going to say to them? Because I won't remember who they are. Yeah, but they won't remember who I am. They might think I'm like this weird Ketty bank robber.
What was your recovery process after the binge? Was it just in bed?
5 weeks of depression.
Okay.
And then a continual bout throughout the year. But it did do one thing, is I haven't touched a drug since, because I don't think I need to. But I've not been very good at them. I did magic mushrooms once when I lived in Holland.
That's cough, of course.
That, I mean, it's kind of. Peer pressure is great for me. And my friends were just like, oh, let's try some magic mushrooms. And I was like, no, I'm not really into the drugs. He's like, oh, I'll try it. And I went, oh, okay then. Because I'm strong. I'm a strong, independent guy. I took them. We took them all together at about 11 o'clock, watched an Attenborough.
Classic. At Attenborough. Blue Planet.
Yeah. Unbelievable decision from us. It was an excellent 2 hours. And then the effect subsided and we all went to bed. And I didn't have a bed then. I was just on a sofa because I was great. Yeah. And there was no curtains. And it was quite a busy road. So all you get is car lights casting shadows over the ceiling. And then the worst bit of the trip started. So it sort of subsided after 2 hours. We thought it had done. We all went to bed. And then 7 hours of just pure fear. And then I had to get on a plane the next day.
What did you mean by fear then?
When there are shadows on the thing, your mind will then start making these into things and they become hallucinations. So I had hallucinations for 7 hours of just generally, like, I don't want to say, like, it's demon type things. They were like shadowy, horrible things. So I was like, this is not a good trip. And I talked to my friends who went upstairs to bed. They were like, yeah, we had the worst night ever. Like, we all just had, but because it kind of paralyzed us.
I've got too many fears in my life to be taking mushrooms and freaking out. And we sit there and just be like, but also just like quite mundane but annoying fears. Just like, it's me. I'll just be freaking out. Like, I'm gonna sleep through my alarm. We're just like, you know, something really mundane but would cause me a lot of anxiety. I think.
If there's anything you can gain from these stories, is please don't do drugs because they're crap. they're fun at the time a bit, maybe sometimes.
Yeah, we love to take that advice on board, but all I do is fail. We don't learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, we don't learn. Yeah. So we just
Nothing
learned.
Nothing learned. Just embracing the
podcast. Nothing learned.
Yeah. Nothing learned. Nothing gained.
We'll stop.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's my failures. I'm not sure they're very good failures. You'll have more creative ones and less and ones that aren't based on my own stupidity.
No. I feel like failure at some point has to be your own stupidity.
Yeah.
You don't fail unless you.
We're
a bit stupid sometimes.
Yeah,
exactly. All types of failure.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone very drug based, and I feel that makes it. It was a year of drugs.
Your year of rogue.
My year. I went rogue for a year. Very much on like even keel now.
Yeah. Everyone needs that, you know. Yeah. Just come out of something and you just got to throw yourself into a bit of a year of rogue.
That was my year of rogue.
Like Glastonbury, you had your fallow year.
I did.
Lost a bit of weight.
Lost a bit of weight. Yeah. Well, that's one thing to gain from it.
Positive.
Yeah, that's a bit weight.
Keep in shape.
Yeah.
Back on the gruel now.
Yeah, back on the gruel.
And the spam.
Gruel and gains.
Gruel and gains.
Gruel and gains, mate.
Ali, do you have a failure that you want to present to the group?
Oh, yeah, go on then. Okay, so, when I was at uni, there was this girl who I really liked, and I really crushed on her. And we kind of did stuff, and there was always back and forth, and I never really came together properly, but... It was good. Great
was it? Was it? Did you ever lay it on the table and was like, "I like you. Let's go on a date," or is it not? Never got to that.
There was
but rebuffed.
Yeah. But the problem is, I only did that until there was only 6 months left of uni, and I was like, "I want to go out with you, but only for the next 6 months, because after that, I don't think we'd be together anymore." So, which is not the most romantic of propositions.
I'd like to date you while it's convenient.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, "Well, I mean, let's just make this official," and she went. And I was like, yeah, okay, I understand. So that was fine. Okay. Then I haven't seen this girl for like 2 years, but she moved down to London. I saw her and I didn't really have the same feelings anymore, which was nice. But went to a house party that they were throwing. And this was a weekend as well. So I had three house parties. The Halloween weekend is obviously our Halloween special coming straight to you on Valentine's Day.
Spooky.
Is that a ghost?
Yeah.
So I had three parties on Friday and Saturday, and I was like, I don't mind sharing with you chaps that I haven't been the most sexually active recently, okay? But I've got three parties lined up over two nights. I'm thinking, surely
you're gonna meet someone.
There's something
going on. I'm a comedian. My chat is gold. You know.
I mean, obviously, we don't need to mention how gorgeous I am.
Yeah.
obviously.
Yeah. For those listening, absolute star, mate. First party, get there after a gig, and the girl I know whose party is opens the door. This is not the one from uni.
Did you drop when you arrived? Just like, I've just come from a gig. Like, it's,
of course. It was a paid gig as well. Not a lot, but I was like, sorry.
My wallet is burdened with all this cash I've earned.
First thing she says is, "I'm so sorry you've come." And I was like, "What?" And it's like, there's no one here. There's like 8 or 9 people at her place. So nothing doing there. So I was like, right, okay. Refresh, got two more pies.
On to the next one, yeah.
Two more pies. Who cares, mate? One out of three, the other two will provide. Get to the first party on the Saturday, just nothing going. There's again three people there. No one's really getting on it. I was like, okay, right, this is fine. I've got one last party, and the last party I had was this girl from uni's party.
Okay.
So I went there on the Saturday. Get there. I'm on the bus there, and my friend calls me. He's already there, and goes, "Mate, don't come. There's no one here." And I'm like, who is at these parties? Who is out on Halloween? No one's at any parties. But I get there anyway.
Were you in costume?
Yeah. I was a Power Ranger. Just doing my duty.
It's good that you didn't need to buy that. You just wear that on a weekend.
Luckily, yeah. I just come from
one of your things.
Just come from being on duty, man. Yeah. Exactly.
That's his character act. His character act is the Green Ranger.
I was green.
Oh,
why did you know?
Just hope that he doesn't meet Jesus.
So.
I get that anyway, but you know what? It's quite a fun time. A few people are there. We just get a sesh anyway. So, I'm off it, man. I'm seshed, and I need a bed. I need someone to sleep. So I just go to this girl like, "That's your bed, isn't it?" And she's like, "Yeah." So I'm going to bed. See it. And she's like, "No, don't get in." I was like, "Okay, no, I'm just gonna pass out of your bed. Sorry." So I fell asleep there, and then I get woken up, and it's the girl, and I'm like, "What's going on?" And she goes, "Ali, like, sorry, but like, you've got to go. Like, I've got a guy coming in."
Oh no!
Oh god, that's brutal.
And I was like, "What?" I was just drunk, and she's like, "I'm sorry, but like, you don't know what it's like being a single girl. Like, could you do me this favor?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." So I just went and slept down on the couch whilst my mate's younger brother went to bed with her.
Facing your demons. Yeah, and then there's
the hearing of them. Yeah, while you try and sleep curled in a ball on a sofa. Just oh no,
having your demons fuck upstairs.
Yeah.
Oh mate, but to be fair, if that was at uni that happened to me, I would have been absolutely crushed. But actually, to be fair, it was actually not too bad. By that point, we were kind of fine. And
I
it was just one
pain.
Of those things, but it was like after that journey of like, surely there's going to be someone there. It ends three parties later with being woken up by the girl I used to really like. So can you fuck off, mate? I'm trying to shag someone here.
I feel your pain as a guy who moved country for a straight guy who I fell in love with and lived
ambitious.
With.
Ambitious.
Oh, I lived with for
challenge.
A year.
Which, did you feel that? Was it the challenge?
Oh, it's made a glorious set in my stand-up, but also horrifyingly bleak time of my life where I used to sleep in a room next to him and hear him banging his girlfriend loudly, fucking loudly as well. Like they had no barriers. They were like, "No, I'm gonna yell."
Was there a part of you that thought that maybe he would be in? Like there must have been.
We met in a music festival, and he floated the idea of potentially being bi-curious, and that was enough for me to go off and move.
Fine, clutch at all the straws, that's enough for me.
The lovely hope. And I mean, he was the perfect guy. We're still really close friends, and if he ever listens to this, please just.
Well, I mean, we are the most listened to podcast, I'm pretty sure, in the world, Tom. Yes.
Yeah.
So, if you can let it out if you want.
If eight people are listening to the most listened to podcast in the world.
I mean, please never.
Four of which are mine and Ali's parents. It's,
my mum listens to this.
They are going to love the drug bit. Yeah. I've coped with that for about a year of my life, and so I really feel your pain with that.
As I said, if it was in the midst of uni, I would have been like, "This is the worst night of my life." But as it stands, it was quite all right. I didn't mind too much. I was actually quite pleased how little I did care, which is quite a nice feeling.
You've moved on.
Yeah.
But it was more just, so for me, it was more just the like, you know, when you're looking for someone to love for a night, some intimacy, and then you get woken up by someone you really like, going, "Mate, can you fuck off?"
I had an interesting thought. So a girl I went on a date with that was, it was fine, you know, it just didn't work out, but whatever, okay? Mm-hmm. So last week I had tonsillitis, I was ill, very, very sick, and I was walking to the chemist to go and pick up some antibiotics for it, and I looked like shit, you know, giant glands, fever, messy, like proper sick man beard, you know, just an absolute mess, okay? Walk past the girl. Of course, every time when you just look like, when it's just like, this is not a fair and accurate representation of me and what I'm about, and you're just like walking. I think I had a bag of KFC as well. I bought some KFC. I'm holding KFC. I'm in my tracksuit and I'm just like, you know, walking to the chemist just sweaty and grey. And it's just like, right. And I could just feel her eyes just telling me like, "God, I got away with one here." You know, it's just not a fair and accurate representation.
I
wanted to, you know, again with the comedian, I wanted to be like, no, I'm doing great. I'm a comedian. This is going great for me. Like,
yeah,
no.
Let me send you a clip.
Let me send you a clip. Come and see me in 2 weeks' time, please.
I'm going through a phase at the moment of just falling in love with people on tube carriages, and I know that's quite a common thing, but I genuinely, there hasn't been. It's quite, isn't it? Everyone. I mean, all I need to do is look at someone, and I'm in love. I even on the way here today, and I'm suffering slight hangover syndrome today, and I haven't put any effort in to the way I look, and I fell in love at least three times, and that was on a very short journey from Borough to Aldersbury, and it's you just want them to. It's always harder when you're a gay because you're like, they might be or they might not be. But you ask them, because I'd like to think that I'd
How's your gay
dog?
Dog?
Absolutely atrocious, mate. I moved country for a straight man.
You got zero gay dog.
It's so bad. Yeah. He goes off into different countries.
And also,
he's married. He could be gay, though. It's still,
My type generally is masculine. So I'd love to think that I'd go in a bar and go, oh, hi, how are you doing? My name's Joe, blah, blah, blah. Chat, schmooze, and then go, oh yeah, let's be in love and have a happy life together. I'll look at some properties. But what I normally do is go up, get drunk enough and go, are you gay? And they get really offended. I know. And they get, no, why, do I look gay? No, I just, I'm one.
It's not weird because I'm one. It's
love
like,
me. Yeah. It's like normally feels sort of straight, but they go up to a lady or a guy in the bar and you chat and sort of go, oh, maybe or maybe not, and then you end up like having a drink, blah, blah, blah. There's always a layer more for me, is whether they're going to be gay or not, and whether they will then find me attractive enough to have a drink with it. But I like the idea, and every time I'm on the tube, this romantic idea of that I'm going to just, that guy's going to sit down, our eyes are going to meet, and I'm going to be like, yeah, and then he sort of opens his like jacket and then a Bristol City badge just appears, and he also, for some reason, speaks Dutch and is brilliant, and is the one that
we're in love with. You're
looking to meet yourself on the tube.
Basically me, but with more confidence.
Here's a question for you, Joe. I want to know this. Have you ever pretended you're straight to get out of, you know, a gay guy hitting on you?
That's a good question.
Have you ever gone, sorry, mate?
But I do a thing with female friends who are getting hit on by guys, and I pretend to be their boyfriend a lot. So I'd go, oh, no. I always feel like it's a good bit of acting as well. I get my best straight guy arm around the shoulder.
Hey doll, how's it going?
Get all the misogyny going. This is my girl.
Yeah, this is my girl.
And then they're just like, no, I want you to be a boyfriend, not a dickhead.
Yeah, holding him on the shoulder.
Not wanting to go anywhere near.
Let's get you home.
Exactly. No, well, the reality is, I just look like a gay guy trying to hold hands with a woman.
Right, guys, this has been All I Do Is Fail's third episode. Thank you very much, Joseph,
it's
for coming down.
Glorious. Thank you so much for having me.
As ever, thank you, Ali.
Thank you. Have you got
any quick plug? You want to plug anything?
I also have a podcast that I do with a friend called Joseph Emsley. It's called Parsons and Emsley Talk Comedy. So if you do want to check that one out after you've listened to all of these, we've got a few on there.
And you've got a live show.
And we're doing a live show on the 15th of December at South Kensington Comedy Club.
Amazing.
Which is going to be carnage.
Okay.
Because it's going to be a party. It's not going to be in the same format as the podcast. It's just going to be an absolute mess.
Everyone having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So please
okay.
come to those things. But you're legends. Thank you very much for having me on.
No, all good. All right. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time, guys. Thank you very much. This has been All I Do Is Fail. Thank you.